We literally believe, word for word, we literally believe the stories. Particularly, I think they're talking about the first 11 chapters of Genesis, the creation of the world, the story of the flood, the Tower of Babel, those kinds of stories. What I try to bring them along to is to find a place where we can find great meaning in these stories without taking them as scientific truth. And so what I want to do a little bit today with you guys, not that you're campers at camp, is to talk about the kinds of things that I would like to talk about with pretty much everybody. What kind of meaning? I always find tremendous meaning in the first 11 chapters of Genesis, not the genealogy so much, but the other parts, the stories. In particular, I want to talk about the story of Shabbat. And look at it both through the eyes of Genesis and a little bit about thinking about our relationship with the world. Largely speaking, I think the first 11 chapters of Bereshit are really about, like, what does it mean to be human? What does it mean to speak language? What does it mean to have a family? What does it mean to have a spouse? What is the nature of the fact that we can kill one another? What are the ramifications of murder? What does it mean to create cities and culture and things like that? There's tremendously rich sources of not so much philosophy, but stories that help us think about the world. When I was in college, I was an English major, and I give a lot of credit to my college teachers who taught me to read short sources and to really use them as like a viewpoint, a beginning, a starting point to think about issues that are important to human beings throughout all of human history. And I think we get a lot of that in the beginning of Genesis, in the beginning of Bereshit, and particularly with the nature of Shabbat. So what we'll talk a little bit about this evening is the role of nature in organizing our lives, and what does it mean to be human being imposing our will onto nature, and in particular in connection to Shabbat. The heaven and earth were finished, and all their array. On the seventh day, God finished the work that had been undertaken. God ceased on the seventh day from doing any of the work, and God blessed the seventh day and declared it holy, having ceased on it from all the work of creation that God had done. Verses that are very familiar. We sing them every Friday night as part of Kiddush. When we think about units of time, I like to reflect a little bit on the units of time. Human beings have most of our units of time are organized by nature. By that, I mean, we think about the most important unit of time is the day. Right? We all organize our lives by day. And day, of course, is governed by the rotation of the earth. So it is a natural thing to do. You don't need culture or wisdom. Animals, for instance, organize their lives by the day. There are nocturnal, there are diurnal animals, etc., etc. The other major unit of time is the year, which is also, of course, a natural unit of time. We all experience the seasons. I love watching the animal shows I love watching them all the time. We were just watching one where, like, it was a fish of some sort, he know, or a turtle, they know to come back once a year in the same space. So they have some kind of clock, even though they're not clocks. They know, they have a year, they must sense it by the sun. The year is a natural unit of time. And of course, the month, maybe a little bit less prominently, but the month is also a natural unit of time. And there are animals that can sense, and there are relationships between the moon and how animals act and how the natural world acts. The week is not a natural unit of time, which I think makes the week very interesting. It's like, it's almost impossible, I think, for us to imagine a world without weeks. I just stop and think about that for a second. Can you imagine a world without a week in it? Like, there would be no days, no days to rest, no specific day of the week. I mean, we all organize, I think probably, we probably organize our, obviously a day is very important, but beyond the issue of the day, we probably more think of our lives in terms of chunks of weeks for the most part. What am I doing on Tuesday? What am I doing on Wednesday? Et cetera, et cetera. But the week is maybe vaguely related. If you times it by four, you get close to a month. But close is not the same as a month. So the week is a totally artificial unit of time. And when you think about Bereshit, the beginning of Bereshit is all organized by the week. Like, that's the structure of the first chapter of Bereshit. It's not the structure of the second chapter of Bereshit. The structure of the first chapter of Bereshit, very familiar to everybody. Day one, God created this. Day two, God created that, etc., etc. So, right, I don't have a literal belief in, right, that's how evolution unfolded. I, you know, went to college, went to high school, didn't learn a lot of science at Atlantic City High School, as Mark can tell you. It was not a great science program, but at least we knew the basics of biology. We knew something about. But when you come back and you think about that first chapter of Bereshit, it's really like you can read it as imposing the week upon us, as if to say to you, your lives shall be organized by weeks, as opposed to by some other natural phenomenon. And of course, the ultimate, the ramifications for us are not so much on what we do during the first 6 days of the week, but the great, great ramifications come in this the culmination of God resting on Shabbat, which later in the Torah becomes a message that we too have to rest on Shabbat. Which is really, when you think about it, a very unnatural thing to do. Like, it is not, we're going to talk about that through some Greek and Jewish sources, but it is not a natural thing to do, to take a day off of a week. Because we live in, I think, Western culture, and maybe this has been around us for thousands of years, we all think of it as natural, and the Christians also have a day off, and the Muslims do too, so most of the people in the world that I'm familiar with have a day off, but it is totally unnatural to take a day off. So Rabbi Sachs, Alav Shalom, I'm not going to read the whole quote over here, but it's a nice, beautiful quote. He's always really the greatest, probably, I don't know, maybe that there ever was in explaining Judaism to the rest of the world. And he talks about the great gift of Shabbat, both in terms of the week, but also in terms of telling us that we have to take a day off. That invention of the notion that being human doesn't mean that you just work all the time. Like, I think from watching all those animal videos, I've really learned a lot. I don't think that the animals take a day off. Like, I think they just keep working all the time until they did whatever they needed to do, and then maybe they take all their time off, like the bears, right? They hibernate, right? Or like they're like sleeping all the time. I love the animals. They're sleeping all the time, and they work when they're hungry. Right? And the rest of the time, they don't have like a weekly schedule. So there's something that the Torah comes along and says, what is it, what's part of what it means to be human, right, is the ability to decide, I'm going to take a day off. I am not just a working machine. I am going to take off, and I'm going to take it off on that particular day to remember this imposing upon nature that occurs in the first chapter of Bereshit. I want to move on a little bit to think about how the Greeks and the Jews in the second and first centuries BCE and CE thought about this, because it's an interesting phenomenon that happens a long time ago. So I want to look at the second century. Is very interesting. Again, there is no, the Greeks and Romans don't have a week. It sounds crazy, but there was no weeks in Greco-Roman life, at least that I've ever, I mean, some of you probably know this better than me, but I've never heard that the Greeks and Romans had a, eventually they get it from the Christians who get it from the Jews. The Babylonians evidently had a week, but Babylonians weren't massively influential on the rest of the world. I mean, maybe in some ways they were, but not as much as Jews and eventually Christians were. So when we read Greek literature, we're reading something that doesn't have the concept of a day off or a week. So one of the things, in the second century BCE, you start to read Greeks criticizing Jews. They have this whole genre of literature. It's not like their main occupation. I don't know if I would call it anti-Semitism so much, or just, like, they just think that Judaism is weird. It doesn't make sense to that, which you can understand that. So I'll just read a couple of quotes over here. The people known as Jews have a custom of abstaining from work every seventh day. On those occasions, they neither bear arms, nor take any agricultural operations in hand, nor engage in any form of public service, but pray with outstretched hands in the temples until the evening. Sounds familiar. Consequently, because the inhabitants, instead of protecting their cities, persevered in their folly, Ptolemy, son of Lagus, was allowed to enter with his army. The country was thus given over to a cruel master, and the defect of a practice enjoined by law was exposed. That experience has taught the whole world, except that nation, the lesson not to resort to dreams and traditional fancies about the law until the difficulties are such as to baffle human reason. Meaning it makes no sense to be taking a day off, especially in times of war, right? I'm not going to get into the issue of fighting wars on Shabbat. According to the book of Maccabees, quickly changed their mind about not fighting wars on Shabbat after the first time they lost. They said, you better start taking up arms on Shabbat. But you can see the sense over here is that this just doesn't make sense to take a day off. There is nothing natural about it. They say that they first chose to rest on the seventh day because that day ended their toils. But after a time, they were led by the charms of indolence, right? You're lazy. To give over the seventh year as well to inactivity. They're referring to the sabbatical year. But basically, people who take a day off a week are just lazy. Right? They don't want, it's not that they have any ideas about not working, they just don't want to work on that day. I want to talk a little bit about this legend of the river. I said I began with stories. I love Jewish legends. Again, the Jewish legends, beyond just the ones that are in the Bible, there's a rich genre of legends that are in Midrashim and all sorts of Agadot, and they really can help us think about worldview. Again, I don't take these stories as literal, but they're expressing, it's like, this is how we discuss philosophy. Right? There was philosophy back then with Socrates and Plato and Aristotle, and they had conversations. The Jews either do it through legal discussions or through stories or expositions of verses from the Torah. And we're going to look at some stories. So Pliny the Elder was not a Jew. He's a historian, a Roman historian, who wrote, "In Judea there is a river that is dry every Sabbath day." Okay? This is the earliest known evidence of this famous legend called the Sabbatyon or the Sambatyon, a legendary river that acts strangely on Shabbat. What is Pliny's take on it? He's basically, this is like almost like saying, oh, you lose your productivity on Shabbat. You Jews are like that river, you're dry on Shabbat. Who wants a dry river once a week? I don't know if anyone would want a dry river once a week, but reading in between the lines, he only says one line about this. That's all we have from him. He doesn't say anything more. But reading in between the lines, it sounds like the idea is you Jews are just simply unproductive, not doing anything good, not doing anything valuable on Shabbat. Now, interestingly, Josephus, living right around the same time as Pliny, writes something slightly different. In the course of his march, this is referring to a general, he saw a river the nature of which deserves to be recorded in history. It runs between Archaea, located in Agrippa's kingdom, and Raphanea, and has an astonishing peculiarity. For when it flows, it is a copious stream, with the current far from sluggish. Then all at once its sources fail, and for the space of 6 days, it presents the spectacle of a dry bed. Again, there's no change to the current. It pours forth on the seventh day, just as before. And it has always been observed to keep strictly to this order, whence they have called it the Sabbatical River, the Sambatyon, so naming it after the sacred seventh day of the Jews. So first of all, as a historian, it's very interesting to see two ancient historians mentioning this same river that acts peculiarly has led to many scholars trying to figure out, did Josephus read Pliny? Were they working on some kind of earlier tradition? I don't have any answers to that, but clearly there are two different takes on this Sabbath river, and Josephus being a good Jew, and I think Josephus was a good Jew, Josephus tries to show the positive side. This is, when does creativity, God's abundance, water, life, when does it spring forth? Dafka on Shabbat. Shabbat is the day when the river runs. The day that we rest, that we don't do any work, is the day, if you will, of abundance, of plenty, of mein chaim, of living waters coming to us. Now, both of them, though, both, even though they're the exact opposite, both of them seem to be saying something. It's a little bit opposite of what I had said before. What I said before, the Shabbat is unnatural. We live in a world of negotiation where we think about, when something is natural, does that make it good or bad or neutral? How do we relate to our lives vis-a-vis nature? Whether they're internal nature in our own bodies, our own innate thoughts, our own genetics, the way we're programmed from the inside, whether it's the culture, right, how we relate to nature is a major way of thinking about how we go through the world. And what both Pliny and Josephus are, I think, arguing is that, certainly Josephus, is that our actions should reflect nature. I mean, Pliny's probably arguing it too. You shouldn't be taking it. It's unnatural. It's weird. It's terrible to be taking a day of rest. You should be working every day. And Josephus is saying, no, the day of rest is the day of abundance. All right, the last piece I want to look at, we're not going to look at the bottom source, is one of my favorite agadot, a very famous story. This is a composite version found in Sefer Haggadah, but it appears in a whole bunch of rabbinic stories. By the way, there is an almost even more avid search for this river than there is for the lost ark. Has anyone heard of the river before? Some of you have heard of the river? No? Okay. There's a whole bunch of archaeologists, because you've got like Josephus, Pliny, sort of real historians looking, mentioning it, and they all want to find the river. Josephus even gives a location. There are also many legends that the 10 lost tribes are trapped behind this river, and they can't get away, and that's what they are. So since there's always a look, people are always looking for the 10 lost tribes, there's been a lot of a search for the river. I'm not all that optimistic about finding the river, but if that's your thing and you want to go wandering around the Middle East looking for river, we don't have that many rivers to begin with, so it shouldn't be that hard. But they've never found it, so that's the way it goes. There are hundreds of agadot about this river, but this is one of the earlier versions. So the Turnus Rufus, which is the red tyrant, who's the Roman governor, he's always called Turnus, which is like from tyrant. You can see the word in Hebrew. And Rufus is red, so he's the red tyrant. Evidently, he probably had red hair, red beard. Ask Rabbi Akiva, how does the Sabbath differ from other days? So what he's probably between the lines is saying, like Mike's question. It's every day is all the same, right? And whether you're on vacation or whether you're at work, there's no such thing as one day being ontologically different from any other day. Every day is the same. But why are you taking that day and pretending it's like some special day? It means nothing, right? There's no such thing as Sabbath. So Rabbi Akiva cheekily responds to him, how does one man differ from other men? Meaning, you're going around telling everyone you're the king, right? Or you're special, right? How are you? You look like a human being, like every other human being. How are you greater than anyone else? So he has a response. The Rufus responds in that the emperor chooses to honor me and not other men. Rabbi Akiva responds, so too the King of Kings chooses to honor. So the initial answer is, I think that the world doesn't exactly work according to nature. Right? We have people who we treat differently from other people, even though we're all made from the same stuff. And we may like that or not like it, but that's generally speaking the way in which the world works. There are people who are have more power and have more responsibility, and we look at differently from other people. We don't look at all people the same. So too, not all days are the same, and that the world doesn't work exactly according to nature. But the Jews seem to be internalizing some of the Greek attitudes, and we're going to see that as we go on in the story. So Rufus responds, what I meant was, who decides that this day is the Shabbat? Meaning, you know, this is like an interesting thing to think about. I think one of the kids at camp once asked me, how do you know that today is Shabbat? How do you know that like we didn't mess up the count sometime many millennia ago, and that like you've always been doing it on the wrong day? Because I don't know. Right, there's even in the Gemara, they talk about that. There's like people wandering around the desert, a little bit like going on vacation, except they have no iPhones. Right, so they go out in the desert, and they don't know what day it is, so they got to figure out, they're lost there for longer than 7 days, they got to figure out when to keep Shabbat. They lost track. Right, it could happen in C also. If you lose track of the day, you don't have any way to track. So he asks them, how do you know? And Rabbi Akiva responds, it's proved by the fact that the river Sambat-Yom, which flows so swiftly on weekdays, that it pulls up stones from its bed, does not pull them up on the Sabbath when it rests. Interestingly, you might notice this is Pliny's version, right? Not Josephus' version, but evidently the rabbis want a river that rests on Shabbat, not a river that works double on Shabbat. So but again, he proves it by nature. He's saying to the Romans, you're arguing against me that Shabbos is not, Shabbat is not natural. And I'm going to argue for, to you, Shabbat is natural. But again, to us as a reader, this is, I think in light of what I said before, a little perplexing, because I think we recognize, I don't know about you, I don't really think there is such a river that stops on the dot every week on Shabbat. Right? It's a story that we're telling ourselves, and I think we can, as readers, feel the tension here, is that we have something that's really humans or divine imposing on nature, and yet we're still trying to find something natural about it, at least Rabbi Akiva is. So Rufus responds, and because there's some fun stuff in the continuation, I want to continue. For your proof, you go as far afield as the wind. And so now he has a better proof. A necromancer, this is someone who raises the dead, will be my proof. For he can raise a ghost on any weekday, but not on the Sabbath. Or your father's grave will be my proof. For it emits no smoke on the Sabbath. The burning of people in the afterworld. Rufus responds, by speaking of such truth, you shame, disgrace, and revel my father. At that, Rufus went off and made the test with his own father. Every day he raised him from the dead. But on the Sabbath he could not raise him. After the Sabbath he again raised him and asked him, have you become a Jew since you died? Which is one of my favorite lines. I'm glad somebody laughed. Like, what are you doing? You're keeping Shabbat down there? Like, when you were up here, you thought Shabbat was ridiculous. Now you're keeping Shabbat? The father replied, he who does not observe the Shabbat when he is in your world can do so by his own choice, but here he is compelled to observe. I don't know why it's so bad, because he's not like, he's not burning on Shabbat. He should be happy to be keeping Shabbat, but evidently he doesn't have any choice and he's got to be a Jew in the afterlife. And Rufus said, what labor do you perform on weekdays? On weekdays we are punished, but on the Sabbath we are allowed to rest. Rufus came back to Rabbi Akiva and asked him, if God wishes to honor the Sabbath, as you say, let him not cause winds to blow on that day. Let him not cause rain to come down on that day. Let him not cause grass to grow on that day. Rabbi Akiva responds, which I'll come back to that in a second, may the breath of such a man be blasted out. That's what you say when you get angry at somebody in the Talmud. I will tell you a parable to explain the matter. When only one man lives in a courtyard, he is allowed to carry things anywhere in the courtyard. So too, since the entire world, all of it belongs to him, and no one else shares this domain with him, he is free to carry things on the Shabbat throughout the world, through every part of it. There's an allusion to the rules of an Eruv, which I did a lot of studying for on my Smicha exams. It was really not a very easy one, but I will spare you the details about that. But I want to come back to a little bit about the end here. I think what's going on a little bit on the end is Rufus is coming back to him and saying, look, come on. All right, you got me on that one river. You got one river that stops your Shabbat. And all right, Dad's not burning on Shabbat. So evidently, the fires of Gehenna don't go on Shabbat. But other than that, look at the rest of the world. Come on. The rest of the world works normal on Shabbat. Right? Everything else, the wind, the rain, all the other natural phenomena, you and I both know that they all work perfectly well on Shabbat. And what Rabbi Akiva answers with him is, I think, an acknowledgement that there's a difference between the divine and us. Right? The divine is beyond. Right? God's world, like once set in motion, is going to work on Shabbat. It is not... Like everything in the world is part of this nature, and it is going to continue to work on Shabbat. But that doesn't have any bearing for human beings. Human beings are not supposed to be working on Shabbat. They are supposed to organize their lives, not as if, right, this we're living in a courtyard that is all ours, because the world, no one, even the most powerful people in the world, don't own the entire world. Right? The world is different for us than it is for the divine. And in that sense, we do have to go beyond nature. Right? We can't simply follow nature. We do have to go beyond nature and impose upon ourselves, and whether it's ourselves or our society, you know, how we accomplish that is not an easy issue. But it is, I think, one thing that I still, let's say, every Shabbat, appreciate my own ability not to do something that I would elsewise do during the week. Like that for me is a very meaningful moment on pretty much every Shabbat. Now it comes most obviously with cell phones and computers. I don't use my cell phone or a computer or other things like that on Shabbat. For those of you there earlier, as Rav Eitan said, I am avidly using WhatsApp during the rest of the week. Those of you I'm in contact with, I answer very, very quickly all of these kinds of things. And I do feel that there's something very important about learning that ability to just say, there's something I'm not going to do today. Now, you know, when it comes to like I took a very, very long, detailed, extremely difficult test on Shabbat. It was the hardest thing I've done in my life. I've done 3 Ironmans, and this was 10 times harder than that. And that's a lot to me, you know, what it means to be Shabbat observant, which is a very, very important part of my life. Is to say to myself, I'm glad I went long enough to get a picture, right? I was about to be done. Now I have to go longer. So it's something I think about literally, maybe not every week, I'll admit. Sometimes you just start to go with the flow and keep things as you've been doing for a long time. But it's literally something I think about all the time. I am consciously making this choice not to do something that would be a very natural thing to do. And that's for me very powerful. It's a lot about, I think, what about Judaism is a lot about. It's creating, right? Using our human will to create the type of world in which we want to live.
It's so interesting to hear you talk about Shabbat as being unnatural. Mm-hmm. And I hear everything you're saying, and certainly it's unnatural in terms of the rhythm of the week, but a week isn't natural, the timing of it. But I don't feel it's the time that I feel most connected to being natural, because it's the time that we strip away so much artifice, right? Phones and lights and, you know, all these things that we do as humans, and just, you know, kind of be in a way that is closer to being animals. So there's a dialectic there, I find, of Shabbat being the closest to being that natural state. I don't see it as something we built on. It's something that we protected from being encroached on by the other 6 days of artifice.
Yeah, I think there's something there. I think that's something to what you said. I think that's, you know, sort of, I'm going to argue against that. And I think to go on with that kind of metaphor would be very interesting, right? To go on with the metaphor, like, how is it that we impose our will on time? We impose our will on time by refraining from and like sort of reverting back to what we, let's frankly call an imagined natural state, because animals aren't really living like that. But you're right, there is something, you know, clearly a lot of Shabbat, the prohibitions are about not creating and not being the full type of human beings that we are. You know, 6 days of work cease and we stop being creators. But so thank you for sharing. It's a good point. We'll take one or two more points. Julia.
What do you think is behind Chernus Lucas being so indignant and upset about the Jews of Jerusalem? It seems like more hostile than just, you know, this is a nature-based unit of time.
Right. So most of those conversations, I think, are probably about rabbis working around their own angst. It could be a little bit of a reflection of living in a Greek society that was hostile to Shabbat. And it's one of the major tropes of anti-Semitism among early Greeks is Jews are lazy because they don't work one day a week. So it could be a little bit of working at that. But it could also be Jews like reflecting on their own. Like, what is this we're doing? No one else takes a day off, right? It's so ingrained in our minds that everybody takes a day off. That to say to people like, what are you doing? No one does that. Imagine everybody else in the world is working 365 days a year and you demand one day a week off. Well, you're gonna lose your job, right? People are gonna think you're wacko. Alright, last question.
I heard some Hasidic approach to it, or about Shabbat and the 6 days of the week as being unity of opposites, actually. Mm-hmm. That you really can't have, I mean, it's just, you can't have the Shabbat without the 6 days of work. You really, you have, it's like two sides of a coin, really.
Right. That's really what Michael's talking about, right? When you're on vacation and every day you're not working, right? Somebody who doesn't have any job, doesn't have anything to work, anything to do, Shabbat is different. There are a lot of things to do that are not Shabbat-like when you're not working employed, right? There's more to work than being employed. But if you were just, imagine, just sat down and all you did 24 hours a day was read. I know this sounds very good to my wife, but, and read on Shabbat. So like, there would be no difference for Shabbat. So yeah, Julie would like that. All right, I want to end here. Thank you, everybody, for coming.